It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 26th day of June, 2023. June is almost done. Kind of blows my mind. Summer is a few days old now. And this program is, of course, live. Yeah. If you would like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany Real-Time Madcap Multimedia Extravaganza, there's the horn chat room on the, in the 3 hours that this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Well, just pop on by headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and before you even know it, you will be participating in the aforementioned Merry, Wacky, Zany, etc., and you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Otto and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, and incapably moderated by moi. So come on by, a good time will be had by all. Of course, headon.live is your best bet for catching the live stream of the program, as well as grabbing the podcast from whatever platform you may prefer. And wherever you take the podcast, please, pretty please, like it, follow it, subscribe to it, do whatever it is that platform calls it. If you're listening on TuneIn Radio, click the little heart button, and eventually we'll have 1,000 individual, not so discreet listeners, participants there. Leave a comment for the algorithms to notice, and we will continue to grow the program. Okay. Now every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. By the way, I'm sorry for being a couple of minutes late. Been a busy day getting some car repairs done. That was fun. No, it wasn't. But at any rate, if you would like to be a supporter of the program as well, the Contribute tab is at headon.live, and you can sign up to be a subscriber via Patreon there, or the main page, you can become a subscriber via PayPal. And so we say thank you on this 26th day of June to our 26th, 25th, and 24th day of the month subscribers. That means thank you so kindly, so very much indeed, to Kenda. Kenda jumped in and heard the shout-out I sent toward the end of the week. Caught the shout-out Friday as my beloved Cardinals dwelling in the cellar. I'm sending $10 to the Horn to change their luck, and a challenge to Christopher in Oregon for $10 to mark the London split with his Cubbies. Thank you, Kenda. And thank you to Emilio as well. Thank you to Ralphs. Thanks so very much to a new subscriber, Charles. Thank you, Charles, for joining in that merry little band that is a partial sponsor of the program each and every month. Thank you so very much. It means a great deal. Thank you to Mark, and thank you to Peter. Thanks as well to Josh and Samson. Thank you all for helping to keep all of this going. Now, just one second, please. But thanks to all of our subscribers and all of our a la carte contributors. We are trying desperately to get caught up with where we need to be. The fundraising hole is at 2055, and with only five broadcasts left, days left in the month, well, the total deficit for the month of June at this point, including these last 5 days of the month, is $3,555. And that takes my breath away just saying it. But then again, we were dealing with a deficit from May, and that's how this kind of came to be. So we will try to knock down as much as we possibly can, I hope. And a kind anonymous friend has said for Monday's program, I'd like to offer up a 2-for-1 tripling Lassie send the sheriff have a show on me challenge if the Horn community can rustle up to $150, I'll contribute up to $300. Excuse me. So that would knock off the fundraising goal by $450. So if we can scare up $150, that'll qualify us for $300 more and make a big dent in where we need to be. Thank you so very, very much. And to get us started, a little note from Joey and the gang. Restore Row, the first anniversary of Row being overturned by a Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. Always remember that it was the state of Mississippi that Fort Sumter-like took a shot at... Damn it. There we go. Squeaky chair. Took a shot at the rights of over half of the people in this country. And it was this, it was last year. Ralph says, I'm offering a $50 challenge for the Supremes maybe letting more Democrats be elected in Alabama and Louisiana. I'm saying maybe because it's not a given that the states will redistrict in the Democrats' favor. True enough. So that means there are $350 worth of challenges on the table to try to get us to the end of the month of June in good fashion. Oh, and, well, there's thunder. How wonderful. Gotta love that. There is a chance of thunderstorms this evening, so that if the program should... I hate to even have to put this caveat out there, but it always applies. If the program suddenly goes poof, you know that Appalachian Electric Power has once again not been up to the task. Yes. Let's see, there's the... Okay, Theo, I have the substitute cowbell on hand. So thank you, Ralphs. That's $350 in challenges on the table. That is so important. Jeffrey starts Joey's Journal with a public service announcement. Well, Robin, it's 5 o'clock. Do you know where your cowbell is? Right in my hot little hands.
Now, obviously, you did not have it handy when Joey ripped off a classic in his last journal when he stated, "My wife informed me that if I ever tell her that I am trans and planning on becoming a woman, she will cut me off. So please take a moment to find your cowbell."
I deliberately did not give a cowbell for that moment of that Lorena Bobbitt kind of moment there. So, yeah. "Okay," says Joey, "I'm sure we're all tired of hearing about the sub-miserable, but I wanted to thank Darlene for her in-depth reporting the other evening, and she did a great job filling all the missing pieces to the story last week on the show. Also, a tip of the hat to Tara Devlin, as Tara's been asking for years now, why do we need billionaires, as they serve no purpose for serving and furthering the betterment of mankind?" And look, here comes Joey to the kangaroo, hopping down the Moran Monday Trail. "These avaricious bastards who can constantly complain about regulations literally and regularly buy off politicians, including recently the United States Supreme Court. The dark, dirty money laundered by the filthy rich then incentivizes legislation allowing the furtherment of wealth for the billionaires. Well, unfortunately for the likes of Stockton Rush, the very regulations he and his ilk likely railed against concerning his submersible cost him his life. This incident is a perfect metaphor or poster child for the Republican Party. They wish to have no regulation that would protect human life, including their own."
Oh, yes, Joey, too, mentioned no regulations, dark money, the Supreme Court, and submersibles, which has immediately made me think of Amy Coney Barrett, who just had her home bought by some very suspicious money. I personally am surprised that Amy COVID Barrett was not on board the submersive, considering she despises regulations, she loves being a subordinate on the Supreme Court, and to her husband, she would have loved a good submission.
Oh no, Junior has questions.
"If dirty money's laundered, then how is it still dirty? Furthermore, that Stockton Rush guy just sounds like a trust fund baby with a name like Stockton."
Meanwhile, Joey, too, is now one of the boys. "Yes, Junior, with a name like Stockton, this guy must have stocked a ton of money in his portfolio." Joey, too, just snickers while Robin shakes her head in disgust.
"Is this Stockton Rush guy related to Rush Limbaugh?"
Oh, no, Junior. Stockton Rush is not related to Rush Limbaugh, but rather is related to the great Benjamin Rush, who was one of the founders of this country and a great man in many regards. Not the only thing Stockton Rush had in common with Benjamin Rush was they both attended Princeton. Stockton Rush also had an MBA from Berkeley, but still was not smart enough to realize that skimping on regulations related to your little built-in-the-backyard submarine is not a good idea.
"Did you realize they've already made a movie about the submersible? The movie is titled The Depths of Decadence and subtitled Remember the Titans."
Joey, you're going to have to do something. You're going to have a long talk with that boy one of these days.
Junior, please resume your studies, but before you do, I would like to inform you what a great and prominent man Benjamin Rush really was.
"Yes, and there was already another submarine company offering two-for-one deals. You can now go and see the remains of the Titanic and the Titan all in one trip."
"Okay then, Junior, but just remember that Benjamin Rush was born in Philadelphia and was an American revolutionary, a founding father of the United States and signatory to the U.S. Declaration of Independence, as well as a civic leader in Philadelphia, where he was a physician, politician, social reformer, humanitarian, educator, and founder of Dickinson College.
He was also prominent in many reforms, especially in the areas of medicine and education. He was considered the father of psychiatry. He opposed slavery, advocated for free public schools and education for women. What a great man." Well, good job, Joey, too. Speaking of Philadelphia, as one who has traveled all over the Philadelphia highways, I would like to send out my hearty congratulations to all of the politicians in PA, including John Fetterman, Bob Casey, the state's two senators, Josh Shapiro, the governor, all Democrats, were repairing I-95 in an incredible 2 weeks when many thought it would take at least 2 months. What the hell, we can still do great things in this country when Republicans aren't there to impede progress. Speaking of progress, yesterday was the 85th anniversary of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which established a minimum wage, overtime pay, and allowed for no child labor. Well, in many states run by Republican governors like Arkansas, much of that law is being dismantled. However, to be fair, in regard to I-95, it was the last legitimately elected Republican president, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who signed legislation to have the interstate highway system created in this country. Eisenhower also warned us of the military-industrial complex as having too much influence and causing wars that need not be. With that in mind, yesterday was also the anniversary of Truman stating the need for the U.S. to engage in war against North Korea. Meanwhile, Giraffrey is channeling his inner flight attendant.
Welcome aboard Ocean Gate, the water gate of our time. We'll be descending to the depths of depravity, 13,000 feet. So be sure to wear your seat belts at all times to prevent the pressure from causing you to bounce about the cabin. Also remember to have your seats backups and that your seat cushion can serve as a flotation device just in case this unregulated Contiki pile of crap implodes on impact at pressure.
I'm giving a cowbell for Contiki pile of crap. Thor Heyerdahl would never have gotten in that libertarian death thermos.
But, Daddy, this vehicle doesn't have any seats, let alone seat belts.
Junior, these people are likely Trumpers. They'll believe whatever you tell them. If you tell them there are seats when there are none, they'll just nod and acquiesce. If your mask falls down in front of you, please put yours on first and then place the mask over your 19-year-old son who didn't want to make the fucking trip to begin with. Your mask would be very beneficial so when this subpar piece of shit implodes and blows the living shit out of you. You won't have to worry about getting water up your nose. Finally, absolutely no smoking on this vessel, considering our high-pressure gases, pure oxygen tanks, and high-voltage systems have not been inspected by those pesky government regulators and could easily cause an explosion, instantly harming or killing you. Now, sit back and relax and enjoy your trip to the Ocean Gate.
This has been Joey's Journal for a More End Monday, the 26th day of June, 2023, with Giraffrey sadly reminding us that this is the anniversary of Roe versus Wade being imploded. And a $25 Restore Roe challenge is on the table. You know, our anonymous friend and Ralphs and Joey and the gang have all stepped forward. There's $375 worth of challenge money out there, and all we have to do to qualify for it is to raise $225. That is what you call a bargain. A bargain indeed. And in fact, Ken writes in from Northwest PA. Subject line, radical self-interest, pledging $50 on the first challenge. It hurts a little, but nothing compared to the pain if Robin goes away. Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much. So that means there's $100 to go on the Lassie Go Find the Sheriff challenge. That's a true tripling challenge. And that will be followed by Ralph's Voting Rights Challenge and the Restore Roe Challenge. Thank you, Ken. Thank you so very much. And thank you to Charlene and Rogues Island stepping in. We now have only $50 to go on the Lassie Send the Sheriff Challenge. That's tremendously helpful. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And make that $40. Thank you, Emilio. Thank you. That's profoundly important. $40 to go on the first challenge, followed by a $50 challenge, and, of course, the Restore Row $25 challenge. Thank you. Now, it is really and for true More In Monday on the horn, and we have more ins. We have so many more ins, it's almost hard to get them all sorted out. It was an interesting week
in Mavromoskovy. Big bad Vladdy Daddy got perilously close to some historic, and he likened it to 1917, unrest in the country. And it was bad enough that the governmental folks who were busy in the business of Russia watching in both the United States and Great Britain began making noises about the fact that this could get really unstable really quickly. But supposedly, Yevgeny Prigozhin and some of his cronies have agreed to be exiled to Belarus, and there's no real word on what happens with the Wagner forces that get left behind. And, you know, I don't think Belarus is nearly far enough away to keep Yevgeny Prigozhin alive. And Putin seemed right nervous because he didn't respond quickly, but at the same time, he also didn't look statesmanlike or decisive or no, none of those things. In fact, the New York Times described the situation. A visibly angry Putin stresses the failure of the Wagner revolt. Prigozhin turned his troops around, having already captured Rostov-on-Don, which was the military headquarters of the invasion of Ukraine. And the residents of Rostov-on-Don didn't complain when his forces overran the town, which says more than just a little bit. Putin, in the meantime, says that, I let mutiny continue to avoid bloodshed. You know, bloodshed. But the fact of the matter is, the forces, the Russian forces that could have taken down the revolt, they didn't show up. And in fact, the Wagner forces, they did, the Russian military did get a couple of helicopters in the air, and the Wagner group took them back out of the air rather quickly. Oh, my goodness gracious, how wonderful. Thank you, Tim. Tim just jumped in. Sorry I've been away the past year or so. Finally made 21 months of keto and have discovered true health. It's a small sum, whatever helps. With a Lassie Save the Sheriff Challenge, there's now $30 to go on that. Thank you so much. Thank you, and thank you to Brendan, who just got us down to $5 to go on the Lassie Go Get the Sheriff Challenge. Thank you, Brendan. So $5 more, and we will triple that $150 to $450. That's amazing. Thank y'all. Putin spoke on Saturday. He's a night owl, and he showed up in his president suit early on Saturday morning and said, "I will crush mutiny. Crush, I tell you, crush. Personally, with my bold and strong Russian hands." And then by today, he was trying to backtrack and make it think that make it look as though he was being somehow merciful.
If from very beginning of events, steps were taken on my direct instruction to avoid serious bloodshed, time was needed, among other things, to give those who had made a mistake a chance to come to their senses, to realize their actions were firmly rejected by society, which, by the way, society didn't.
The Russian middle class sat on their hands in Moscow, among other places.
And that the adventure in which they had been involved had been tragic and destructive consequences for Russia and for our state.
So it looks like Prigozhin's enemies, particularly Sergei Shoigu and Valery Gerasimov, they're still in place. And as to the bloodshed, Putin said,
organizers of mutiny, having betrayed their country, their people, also betrayed those whom they dragged into the crime. They lied to them, they pushed them to death under fire to shoot their own.
Of course, Prigozhin lost his shit when Putin's boys rocketed the Prigozhin's Wagner forces.
The Wagner fighters who stand down from fratricidal bloodshed, if they do not sign contracts with glorious Russian army, can go to Belarus or just go home to your families. That will be fine. Anything but marching on Moscow, because I remember what happened in 1917. We have taken... All levels of Russian society have taken firm, unambiguous position in support of constitutional order. Everyone was united and rallied by the main thing, responsibility for the fate of the fatherland. Wait a minute. What is this gender craziness? I thought it was the motherland. It's now parent land.
He's worried. He's scared. And rightfully so. Randy Radar pointing out, let's you and him fight is all well and good until the missiles start flying. It appears that, Volodymyr Zelensky pretty much just sat back and watched the implosion take place. Oh, there's that word again. So it remains to be seen what will happen relative to the ongoing Ukrainian counterinsurgency. Meanwhile, in true Morian Monday form, in a couple of just beautiful moments of morality of their sort, and since it is Morian Monday, it should come as no surprise that this story features the governor of Texas, Greg Asbot, who apparently cannot tell the difference between satire, parody, and actual reporting. He got all excited over the weekend, Greg Asbot did. Ran to Twitter when he read a new story about, wait for it, aging country superstar Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks has apparently earned the ire of Maggots Everywhere by saying that his bar on Lower Broad in Nashville, Tennessee, will serve all the beers. All the beers. People can get a Bud Light if they want one. They can get a... Really? All the beers, Garth? Are you really going to have Iron City and Icy Light? I find that difficult. But, you know, you're Garth Brooks. Maybe you will. But the level of cluelessness on the part of the guy who's actually... Well, the fact of the matter is, we were reminded way back in the early parts of this century that the governor of Texas is really not that powerful as governors go. It's not like he has the monumental powerful powers of, say, the governor of Florida. So he has time to tweet. And this, I know, tomorrow's Tuesday, not today, but this titanic intellect, this Republican Descartes, this maggot Einstein, read a piece from something called, wait for it, just as a matter of curiosity, how many of us would see the website and go, huh, wonder about this? It's called the Dunning-Kruger Times. We've talked about the Dunning-Kruger effect here on this program from time to time. The Dunning-Kruger effect says that certain people who are, is afflicted, what is the right word, with the Dunning-Kruger effect don't know what they don't know. And that this can lead to some less than good consequences. At the Dunning-Kruger effect website, they note that the Dunning-Kruger effect is a network of parody, satire, and tomfoolery, and if you believe that it is real, you should have your head examined. It's time for Greg Asbaugh to have his head examined, because that's exactly what he thought. He thought it was real because he so desperately wanted it to be real. Because the story said that in Texas, Garth Brooks, aging country superstar, had been booed off the stage at the one, get this, the 123rd annual Texas Country Jamboree in Hambriston, Texas. So that would mean the 123rd annual Texas Country Jamboree has been going on since 1900. You know, before country music existed. And there's only one problem here. There's no such thing as the Texas Country Jamboree, in part because there's no such place as Hambriston, Texas. I mean, I get that Texas is a big place. Big, big, second largest state in the Union in terms of landmass. But wouldn't you expect a governor of Texas to know about something as long-standing as the Texas Country Jamboree? And wouldn't you expect the governor of a state such as Texas to know about a town called Hambriston, Texas? Where is Hambriston? Is it just outside Amarillo? Or maybe it's in the distant exurbs of San Antonio. Hi, Texas T. Possibly it's maybe it's part of the sprawl that forms the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. I'll bet you there's all kinds of Texans out there, and they're probably not maggots or Republicans, who would look at you and go, There ain't no such place as Hambriston, Texas. But that didn't slow Greg Assbot down, no. He posted a link to the story and said, go woke and go broke. Because, see, Garth Brooks recently sold out the 72,000-seat NRG Stadium in Houston. He also sold out the 80,000-seat AT&T Stadium in Arlington. That was last year, of course. That was before he decided to say that he would actually serve Bud Light in his bar in Nash Vegas, Tennessee. And eventually the Maggot Moran, governor of Texas, figured out he'd been had, or kind of had himself. God. And quietly deleted the tweet. A member of the Texas legislature, who is not a maggot, a guy named Greg Kassar, said, Greg Abbott just accidentally posted a satire about article because he wants to hate on queer Texans and Garth Brooks so bad. The Texas Country Jamboree doesn't exist. Hambriston, Texas is not real. And the governor is not fit to tweet, much less govern Happy Pride. A journalist by the name of Christopher Hooks picked up on the story and quoted some of the story that Greg Assbot took to be real.
We're not really looking forward to his opening, said Nashville Mayor Art Tuballs, T-U-B-O-L-L-S. We expect there'll be a lot of chaos with leftists swarming the area to flash their fake breasts in front of children. Mayor Tuballs doesn't want his city to be another San Francisco, where drug addicts poop on veterans regularly before the city Narcans them and gives them free room and board.
This is hilarious to me. But it's such a perfect example of confirmation bias. Greg Assbot believed this because Greg Assbot believes this to be true. Greg Assbot actually thinks that there are drug addicts pooping on veterans in San Francisco before they get Narcan and are given free room and board. Greg Assbot genuinely believes that drag queens are running around Nash Vegas flashing innocent little children with their fake boobies. And no one was happier about all of this than the guy who wrote the piece, going by the name of Flag Eagleton. Oh, my goodness. My journalistic Caton is on point, Patriots. It's not my fault they elected a moron. As for his bar, Garth Brooks said, I want it to be a place you feel safe in. I want it to be a place where you feel like there are manners and people like one another. Our thing is this, if you're let into this house, love one another. If you're an asshole, there are plenty of other places on Lower Broadway. And there are. One individual referring to Greg Assbot as Governor Jade Helm. There's a blast from our past. Remember Jade Helm when the jackbooted, jackboot wearing blue helmeted goons were going to come across the dry part of the Rio Grande River and ruin all our golf? But everything in maggot ideology is based upon falsehoods. The war on women, the war on LGBTQ plus people, the war on people of color, the war on migrants, is all based on a pathetic tissue of hateful lies. But while we're in Texas, perhaps it'd be a good thing to take note of,
For all the moms and dads out there, just a quick note, if you've been listening to this program for a while, you know that it's not the drag queens you have to worry about. It's the Christian men. And so we have here the story of, and we've talked about him on the program before, Brian Slayton. But before we get there, a couple of observations. Ralph says, LOL, I looked up Hambriston, Texas, and about the first 10 links were to the Greg Abbott story. Well, it's the sum total and entire history of the imaginary town of Hambriston. And Steve in New York said, it's kind of like actual fake news. I suspect that Newsweek's title is no accident. Greg Abbott duped by fake news story mocking Garth Brooks. Newsweek has turned into a right-wing POS publication. I guess there's a market. But Brian Slayton had barked and grunted and groaned and hooted and shrieked about how the children of America were being indoctrinated with cultural Marxism, his words, and said that having guns was a right that was given from God, and that even in the cases of rape or incest, abortion should be abolished. Slayton came from a little real town in Texas, not the host of the 123rd Texas Country Festival, Mineola, Texas, in East Texas. And he was rapidly on the rise, a budding superstar of the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing right wing. He was an accountant. But, and this is the important part, he was also a youth minister. Former youth pastor. And then he invited a 19-year-old member of his staff to come to his apartment at midnight, gave her booze, and fucked her. And the Texas House of Representatives, all 147 of them, most of them Republicans, voted to throw him out with not a single vote in his defense. He was actually the first politician to be removed from office. In the Texas legislature since, 1927. That's saying something when you think about the Texas legislature. The shade of Molly Ivins is shaking her head. When he resigned, of course, he said he was taking time to spend more time with my young family. I worry about the time he takes to spend with his young family. Meanwhile, changes are taking place in Texas. Recent census data indicates that Hispanics surpass the non-Hispanic white population in Texas 40.2% to 39.8% for the first time since the 1800s. This is, of course, the heart and soul of white maggot panic. And so, well, Brian Slayton is no longer a member of the legislature. Maybe he can get back into preaching. Right? Oh, and this past Friday, a little something momentous happened. I have not seen the outcome of this yet, but A little meeting was taken by the Feedum carcass in the House of Representatives. You know, this is the clearinghouse for all things madcap and maggot. And they got together, and they actually had a meeting concerning whatever shall we do about that nutbag, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Don't worry. Common sense has not broken out in the Feedum carcass. The Feedum carcass is, of course, people like Andy Biggs and that dude from South Carolina, Stan, and Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert, among others. And they're thinking about expelling Marge from the Feedum carcass because she's been attacking their membership ever since she decided to hitch her wagon to the weaker speaker, Kevin McCarthy's star. Because, of course. And I guess it all sort of came to a head, if you can say that. It came to a head last week when she and Bobo, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, the clanny granny, got into a seventh grade slap fight right there on the floor of the House of Representatives. So she may be feeling a little bit of pressure, marginal trailer queen, a little bit. And thank you. To our buddy Texas T down in San Antonio. We are done with the Lassie Send the Sheriff Challenge, and we are $10 into Ralph's $50 voting rights challenge. So there's 40 more to go on that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Texas T. Ken writes in, subject morontology. Interesting word. Ken defines that as the study of Republicans. And you're not far off. I think you're center bull, as a matter of fact. So today, marginal trailer queen was barking and grunting in a field hearing in Florida about the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Her pal, Matt, it just gates worse, chaired the meeting. And curiously, Marge showed up with some gun violence statistics. Don't worry, she wasn't going to make any sense.
Here's Chicago gun violence in 2023. Memorial Day weekend. 53 people were shot. 11 people were killed. Did you see the Democrat pundits on...
Sorry, her audio is shit. This is not on me. People were shot in Chicago. Did you see the Democrat pundits? I think she says pundits.
11 people were killed. Did you see the Democrat pundits on television screaming their heads off about mass shootings in Chicago? No. You didn't hear a thing about it, and they don't dare report it. Why is that? Because it tells the truth that every single American knows. It tells the truth that strict gun laws actually create murder. To carry a gun in Chicago, you need a firearm owner's ID and a concealed carry license, which are difficult to get.
Not really.
Gun thefts occur in southern states, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, South Carolina. That's where most criminals steal guns. Why? Because we carry and we own guns, right? Now, again, let's go back to who do we blame? We blame the criminals. These are people breaking the law to steal guns to commit crimes.
This is going to take a minute. people go down south to steal guns from law-abiding citizens, because they got guns down south, who are apparently not able to keep the bad people from taking guns from them, to go back up and shoot up Chicago. I think she's kind of melting right before our very eyes. So, the stronger the gun laws, the more murders you have. I mean, the problem is that doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is straight up Chewbacca defense. Don't make no sense. And of course, it's not true, too. You do have less gun violence in the states that have stricter laws regarding how one goes about buying a gun. But that's not the end of today's marginal trailer queen sighting. Oh no. This is what makes me think that whatever the dosage is, it isn't working. Just one second. Clack, 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 clack. There it is. There she is. I don't know. Maybe she's trying to get to be good friends with the anti-vaxxer Bobby Kennedy. Yesterday, Sunday, she went on the Twitter machine. Then she went, in other words, she went down into the ditch. And I wish I was kidding. And said, last night in my D.C. residence, the television turned on by itself, and the screen showed someone's laptop trying to connect to the TV. Just for the record, I'm very happy. I'm also very healthy and eat well and exercise a lot. I don't smoke and never have. I don't take any medications. I'm not vaccinated, so I'm not concerned about blood clots, heart conditions, strokes, or anything else. I don't know why the TV's trying to spy on me. I don't have anything to hide. I just love my country, and the people know how much they've been screwed over by the corrupt people in our government, and I'm not willing to be quiet about it or willing to go along with it. And she added a link about smart TVs that spy on people. Marge, is your TV spying on you, hon? How about your toaster? Is your refrigerator whispering to you in the dark and still of the night? Yeah? And your phone, is it connected to that dread 5G that Bill Gates was using to put the living microchips in your bloodstream? Was it, Marge? They spy on us. That's what they're doing. And it's probably the Biden crime family. Sure, Marge. Sure. I'm sorry, Marge.
I can't do that. Margie, Margie. No singing. But we do have $40 to go on Ralph's challenge. Cultural Marxism, says Steve in New York. This is also a Tory Johnsonista Sunakian meme. Serious question. What is cultural Marxism? What is it supposed to be? The best way I can answer that question, Steve, is to define what it is not. That is a real, actual thing. It's a gobbledygook phrase that has been ginned up and drummed about and marched around and pulled like a little red wagon. See what I did there? Red wagon, yeah. By the likes of, you know, Lobster Daddy, Jordan B. Peterson, who, by the way, was recently seen complaining to Leon Scum because he hadn't seen any new followers in a week on Twitter. Where have all the bots gone? Where are all my fake followers?
Dear Mr. Elon Musk, how can this possibly be?
Followed by little Benny, my dry wife Shapiro, saying, yeah, me neither. I wish these people weren't as hilarious, unintentionally hilarious, as they are. But you might recall that last week we talked about Bobby Kennedy working Alex Jones's corner and talking about how atrazine is turning the frogs and the children's trans. Sorry. Well, with Bobby occupying that corner now, yeah, Alex Jones had to move on. And he's come up with a doozy. And in point of fact, this tracks with something I've said in the past. You might recall that I have said that if Nitwit Nero dies in his sleep of completely natural causes, the maggots will immediately begin barking and grunting, he was murdered by the deep state. Well, look, this program is so far out ahead of the curve, it's like we're on Straight Road. I think about that road out in, you know, Monument Valley. Just like that. And, you know, we say it here, and then eventually somebody like Alex Jones will say it there. And so Alex Jones has announced in an interview with some outfit called PBD, and anyone who actually wants to interview Alex Jones immediately becomes suspect in my book, but maybe that's just my own bias coming into play. But in that interview, they asked Alex Jones, you know,
what about the president?
And one never knows if Alex has a snoot full of Peruvian marching powder or nasty-ass steroids. Who knows? But this is what resulted from the question. Get the hockey puck, y'all. Or at least take a moment to appreciate the fact that you participate in a broadcast community that sees these fuckers coming from a mile away.
Are they going to succeed to prevent him from running?
I mean, they're succeeding in a civil war right now in Russia. I mean, yeah, the globalists hijacked the most powerful country in the world with all our ingenuity and all our money and all our power, and the world's in deep trouble. And again, it's not like I'm saying China or Russia are good either. It's just a monstrous situation. And if people don't get serious and get out of their comfort zones, I think they're going to demonize him, indict him. And then I think they'll blow his airplane up. I really, at a gut level, believe they're going to kill Trump.
Who's this? Trump?
I mean, I believe the deep state establishment will murder him. I mean, I believe he's going to steadfast go through all this. He'll be 30 points ahead in the primaries. Nothing's going to stop him. And then they just, he dies of a heart attack because they poison him or they blow his airplane up. And I think, and Trump, by the way, has talked to Roger and others and said, I'm ready to die. I'm committed. I'm going all the way. So
you think if they you're saying they're going to do that, they would have already done it. Like, why haven't they already done it?
Because that turns him into a martyr, and they'd rather assassinate the person. Saw what JFK did to him. I mean, this will be 50. I mean, look, they are not the higher ups, and some of their smart ones are not stupid.
The lizard
people.
Like,
if we kill him, it'll cause way bigger problems down the road. Don't do it. But before they let him get in charge and prosecute them, which Trump said he will, he goes, I'm getting in. I'll be destroyed, and you'll be destroyed with me, or they'll be destroyed. It's a death battle. This isn't like some cage fight with Zuckerberg. And everybody's like, oh, Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, biggest thing ever. Yeah, great. Two modern emperors, tech titans. When Rome was collapsing, they had emperors as gladiators. Now, the movie Gladiator is actually, again, a composite of a bunch of true stories. That really happened. And the whole point is, while we're all watching this stupid stuff in the submarine and the gladiators, literally
gladiators and submarines.
I believe won the election. I'm not supposed to say that. He barely lost. Trump. Now to have them put him in jail so he can't vote for him or whatever, it's just not going to fly. It's not going to happen. And so, but at the same time, you saw what Comey and others said on TV. Well, whatever we do, we got to stop him.
Yep.
He can't be allowed in because he'll put us in prison. And remember, you can pull this clip up.
Which no one
Biden
ever said.
Last December, like December 13th, as I put the clip last week on my show, he said repeatedly, Biden says we will not allow Trump to be president again. And he says, we'll use whatever we have to with law enforcement and the Constitution to make sure he's not president. And he just laughs arrogantly. He's like, people are like, hey, what about Hunter? He's like, it's lunacy. But time's running out. So they still have the power. They're still the executive in control. So if you're the guy with the doomsday button, you can hit it. You think you win, but you blow yourself up at the same time.
Yep.
So they've already destroyed themselves. The only question is, can they take us with them?
Anybody got a cogent translation of that? Something, something, deep state, something, something, frogs, gay, something, something. There, he's going to put us in jail. And remember the story from last week. The one guy has pled guilty now to a misdemeanor relating to the terrorist attack of January 6, 2021, and the guy he was with on the portico of the Capitol was the guy you just heard from. How are they going to blow his airplane up? I mean, frankly, that Trump jet is a rickety old piece of shit, such that it's a miracle the damn thing will fly at all. Yeah. You know, they're just indicting and indicting and indicting and indicting. Y'all, I think we've been found out. Stoke the stroke and everything. Yeah. But what he's doing is laying the groundwork here for more domestic terrorism if the dude chokes to death on his taco bowl or one Big Mac too many. That's a death battle. Oh, PBD is some dude named Patrick Bet David. Now, one thing is true. At least if New Hampshire is any indication, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis,
appears to be, there's that word again, it just keeps coming in so handy, imploding. He got into a tussle with the New Hampshire Republican women by setting up a campaign appearance on the same day as the fundraiser for the New Hampshire Republican women, and the New Hampshire Republican women complained about it because they had already booked who? Yeah, Nitwit Nero to speak to their weird bunch. And it was described as amateurish, stupid. Not the New Hampshire Association of Republican Women or whatever it's called, but DeSantis for not having the common sense to check and see who was doing what when in a state that really isn't that big. And then by way of excuse, DeSantis said, "Oh, it was a long way away from where our event was. Beep, boop, I am a bot." And so now Nitwit Nero's numbers are like 55% of Republicans, and, well, DeSantis is plunging like a paralyzed falcon. Frankly, if anybody's a threat to the health and well-being of Nitwit Nero, I'd suggest it's probably Ron Monkey Up DeSantis. Nitwit Nero's actually in kind of a tough spot because if I were him, I would not... If I were Nitwit Nero, I would feel as safe in Florida as, well, Nitwit Nero if he was, you know, LGBTQ. Balmer Bob points out, is your TV watching you? Marge may have something to go on. Smart TVs do have spying features, but according to this article from USA Today, they can be turned off. Bob, can those features turn the TV on autonomously? Or did she just think it was off and woke up after she'd sobered up a little bit? I don't know. But if Alex Jones has gone down the road to they're going to bump Trump off, you can bet that's going to become a talking point. It's sort of like the talking point that began percolating last week, maybe the week before, that Nitwit Nero, because of his abiding respect for the Kennedy family and the greatness of the Kennedys, will actually seek to have Bobby be his running mate, you know, so that they can have an all-felon presidential ticket. Bobby already is one. And, well, by the time the election comes around, Nitwit Nero may be one too. And yes, he can run from prison just like Lyndon LaRouche did. The question becomes, if he were to win while still in prison, does that mean is that a get-out-of-jail-free card? You're not prosecuting a president. He's convicted. Does that mean sentencing? If he hasn't been sentenced yet, would sentencing have to be held off? May you live in interesting times, you know? Hey, thank you, Tim. That's great. That means that both Ralph's and Joey's challenge have been met. Thank you so very much. And so we have we've knocked out $600 of the $2,055 fundraising hole we're in. We're down to $1,455, actually. $1,410. And then we'll worry about the rest of the week as this week goes on. Program note. There probably will not be a program on Wednesday. I have to travel that day. But that should be the only interference, barring further problems with the car. Today was brakes day, and so I'm about $300 lighter. And I took it in for brakes because, well, I'd never done brakes on the car before. And it was due. And it began making a weird sheet metal sort of shrieking sound from time to time. And I assumed that was brakes. So they got me into the garage. They were very nice about it. And I've got brand new brakes all the way around. And then as I was driving home, that same shrieking sheet metal noise began to happen again. So I'm getting up in the morning and going back to the garage and see if we can figure out what exactly that noise is, because I don't like it. And hopefully I won't be there all day tomorrow. I've got appointments. But Wednesday I do have to be away. If it's possible for me to get back in time for airtime on Wednesday, you can know for a fact that I will. But I just don't want to have to be try to do the whole bat out of hell thing to get back. So, you know, please make a note of it. And by the way, since we are approaching the midway point of the program, if you're listening to the podcast, please, wherever you listen to it, like and subscribe. Leave a comment. Maybe post a link to the podcast on your social media account. Let people know what an absolutely unique little independent broadcast effort we have going on here. Let's check in with Rick Wilson over at the Lincoln Project. They live rent-free in Nitwit Nero's head. He went on, Nitwit Nero did, went on his rickety, falling apart, rattle-trap social media platform, Derp Social, and said, "The perverts and misfits of the Lincoln Project have barely gotten together again after their disgusting scandal and pieced together some ads. They're running on fumes. Were they ever prosecuted for their crimes? Are their donors under investigation? Check it out." And Rick Wilson responded, "Well, good morning to you too, princess. Did you wake up with a wet Depends this morning? 'Cause you seem pissy." And then came the new video. And you know that the walls at Mag-a-Loco or Bed Monster were running red with ketchup.
Donald Trump indicted again, this time for violating the Espionage Act, one of the worst crimes imaginable. But he joins a select list of Americans also indicted for this crime. Robert Hansen, Aldrich Ames. Anna Montez, John Walker, Ronald William Pelton, all indicted for violating the Espionage Act with the prison terms that traitors and spies against America deserve. And what will Trump get? The men and women running against him for president will defend him, praise him, make excuses. They'll lie about the prosecution and make up stories about the deep state to rile up the MAGA base. There's no excuse for espionage. No defense for stealing America's secrets or sharing them with anyone, ever. Trump did this to himself. He took the documents, he shared them, and conspired to cover it up.
He stored them in his
potty.
People
who commit this crime belong in prison, not the White House.
That's when Rick Wilson said, "You know, we're always right." By the way,
I hear that the espionage ad is really the one that made you angry. And then addressing the misfits and perverts line, Rick Wilson said, "You're the one, Donald, who in a court in New York was convicted of sexual abuse and assault. You're the one, Donald, who's presently under indictment for violating the Espionage Act. And we're going to kick your ass the whole way. And by the way, you promised 291 days ago you were going to sue us. You haven't. And you want to know why? Well, this is cute. Let's just enjoy it in Rick Wilson's own voice.
Hey, good morning, Donald. I see from your postings on Truth Social, the most ironically named social media platform in history, that once again the Lincoln Project has gotten into your tiny, tiny little brain. Well, we're glad to do it, as always, because we're always happy to tell the truth about the low, loathsome, corrupt, venal, mendacious scumbag that you are. And you know we're always right. The two ads that are making you crazy today, the rats ad about all the people around you who are betraying you, you hate that a lot. But the espionage ad is the one I'm hearing has really made you angry. I'm sorry, we put you in the same category as terrible spies in American history because you violated the law. Now, this morning, you also accused us of being misfits and perverts, which is a great band name. I will say that, and thank you for that inspo. But you're the one, Donald, who in a court in New York was convicted of sexual abuse and assault.
Just a note, Misfits and Perverts is a great band name. But it is still not nearly as good of a band name as Libertarian Death Thermos. I'm standing by that one.
You're the one, Donald, who is presently under indictment for violating the Espionage Act, the act that under which the worst traitors in American history have been charged. And by the way, Donald, that's you. You're just like Aldrich Ames. You're just like Robert Hansen. You don't care about America. You care about yourself. That's the greatest trick you've ever pulled on your rubes, is that they think you care about this country, and you don't. And we all know it, but we're the ones who call you out on it. You tried to kill us with Bill Barr in 2020 by getting us investigated by Bill Barr. It didn't work. You tried to kill us off with millions of dollars of advertising and opposition research and direct mail campaigns against us. It didn't work. You're the one, Donald, who understands that the Lincoln Project kicks your ass like nobody else. And we will be here all through 2024, just like we beat your people in 22, beat you in 2020. We're going to beat you again in 2024. We're always in the fight, Donald. You can't make us go away. Also, it's been 291 days since you have threatened to sue us, and you haven't. You know why? PAB. See you, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
And, you know, in my little world, I need to think that he actually does watch these things, and he rages, and the ketchup flies. Because it's just, it just fits. And then there was my filthy morning habit today, where they were put out, shall we say, by Nitwit Nero's promise to the domestic terrorists who tried to overturn constitutional governance in the United States on January 6, 2021.
The rioters charged in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Trump made the pledge at a fundraiser on behalf of those defendants, which was hosted at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club by the Patriot Freedom Project, a group founded by family members of those charged. Trump's speech was filled with misinformation and conspiracy theories about the insurrection. Jonathan Lemire, your thoughts? I mean, at this point, you think it can't get more twisted, but this is pretty twisted.
Yeah, the bottom just keeps getting lower. Why not? I mean, he's called January 6th a beautiful day. He has promised to pardon most of the January 6th rioters. He has now suggested he'll make a contribution to the Legal Defense Fund. And, of course, let's not forget, he has appeared with a January 6th choir convict because that's Donald Trump right now, Richard Haass.
A convict choir,
Which we should never lose sight of. We should bring it up at least once a week. This is where we are right now with January 6th. And it's not just Trump, though. Some of the other Republicans are saying they do the same thing. Not the contribution to the Legal Defense Fund, but DeSantis has said he might pardon some of them. Others have as well. There's been some other stuff that not. Pence said he probably wouldn't. Nikki Haley said she probably wouldn't either. But just show us, if January 6th continues to be normalized, like, what could that mean for that 2024 election? That's a worrisome trend.
Just one side thing before I answer that. The idea that Donald Trump would contribute to the Legal Defense Fund, I'm not a lawyer, but these are people who might be called on to testify against him. We still haven't had the indictments dealing with January 6th. So he would potentially be paying money to people who could be called upon by the Justice Department to testify against him.
The only flaw with that, Richard, is that we're actually assuming that Donald Trump's going to give away any of his own money.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Look. The idea of somehow normalizing or regularizing January, that to me is the single scariest thing, because what is that? That is the use of violence for political purposes by non-state actors. That happens to be the textbook definition of terrorism. Look, I spent 3 years as the U.S. envoy.
Good God, he finally said it.
Before that, you had 3 decades of the Troubles. What were the Troubles? Sporadic, decentralized political violence by all these groups, militias, whatever you want to call them, provisional IRA, loyalist groups, and so forth. What scares me, Jonathan, if January 6th ever gets normalized in this country, we could have the American version of the Troubles, where we could have assassinations. Yeah. We could have political rallies disrupted by people going into them, beating up people on the other side. What January 6th should teach us is it can happen here. We are not somehow so exceptional, so different. Plus, we're a country awash in guns. It's also very easy to go into any, you know, hardware store and buy the ingredients of explosives. So we shouldn't fool ourselves. The fact that the Republican Party and others are not prepared to delegitimize this, every religious leader on Friday, Saturday, Sundays ought to be denouncing this sort of thing. There can be no space in American democracy for this sort of thing, or there won't be American democracy.
Now, I see a real challenge here, Michael Steele. I mean, you saw Chris Christie getting booed, trying to tell Christians the truth about accountability, about the difference between right and wrong, and they were not having it to an extent when it comes to Donald Trump. And this now, paying for the legal defense of J6 protesters, insurrectionists, that's a complete distortion of not just Christian values, American values.
It is, but I think to Richard's point, and it's an important one, Donald Trump ain't putting any money out there for nobody.
Oh,
remember,
no.
This is the same guy who told people, y'all go out and do all these bad things, and don't worry, I'll pay your legal fees. Right. I mean, he's not paying his own legal fees. You're paying his legal fees. We just talked about that. He's skimming 10% of every dollar you send him to pay his legal fees. He's not paying them. So what the hell makes you think he's going to pay yours? What makes you think he's going to pay for your legal defense? But this, they don't care. And that goes right back to the point I was making in the last segment. This is less about where the politics is and a lot more about where the American people see themselves, how they see the country, how they see their neighbors, hell, how they see their own family members. I mean, because this is what we're talking about. We're talking about such a stripping away of the essence of how we characterize ourselves and how we looked at our responsibilities as a country, not just to our friends and allies around the globe, but most especially the neighbor around the corner. And when we see them as others, Mika, that begins to strip away that humanity, that thing that would in the past have us look at January 6th aghast, outraged, and condemn any politician who would suggest otherwise, condemn any politician or particularly any party that would advocate letting those people off. We're beyond that now. Now we're seeing the embrace of it in a way that we should be really concerned about, to Richard's point.
And that's what I'm focused on. I know Donald Trump won't pay anybody's legal bills, but he will get other people to. And he will normalize supporting people who attacked our democratic process. And that is more Trump-like, fascist-like behavior that is taking hold in the mindset of his base, which is still very much there. Richard Haass, thank you very much for being on this morning. And still ahead on Morning Joe, the latest out of Eastern Europe this morning, following a short-lived revolt led by a mercenary group in Russia.
Yeah. So he's gonna pay their bills. Sure they are. Sure he is. But I don't like it when they say it can't get more twisted. Do not ever tempt the goddess of irony like that, morning MSNBC Morning Zoo crew. Because it can. I mean, just recently, he threw a fit, Nitwit Nero did, over the fact that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, which at one point in time was basically his bullhorn and stenographer all rolled into one, well, he's mad because the Oakland County Republican Party this weekend gave Nitwit Nero a major award. Think Darren McGavin in A Christmas Story. It's a major award. It's for Gileg. They called it Man of the Decade. You know what? I bet he's mad at the Oakland County Republican Party, too.
Decade. Clearly, I'm the man of the century. I'm the man of the history of the whole country forever under God.
The tizzy that he had was as follows.
So Fox News, which is down 37% in the ratings,
because that's what he follows. He follows ratings, I guess.
Doesn't cover my getting Man of the Decade Award because of my great trade policies in Michigan. Or my keynote speech for Faith and Freedom in D.C. And then wants me to show up and get them ratings for their presidential debate where I'm leading the field by like 40 points. All they do is promote against all hope Ron DeSanctimonious, and he's dropping like a rock. Sorry, Fox News. Life doesn't work that way. Stop trying to make fetch happen.
I added, stop trying to make fetch happen. But one of these days, he'll say that, too. He will, you know it.
I got Man of the Decade. Ron DeSanctimonious didn't.
And we've got some crooked court to report on, but first this. Chris Krispy Kreme, he of Bridgegate, the beach-going governor. Now, he went to the Faith and Freedom Coalition event, too. You might have noticed how, what was it, Richard Haass said in the MSNBC clip there, that every preacher in every pulpit should be denouncing Donald Trump every Sunday from now until the sun burns out. He wasn't wrong, but I don't think Richard Haass has a terribly good grip on just who the evangelicals are. Emphasis on the word evil. They support, he rapes and they support because, well, outfits like the Southern Baptist Church have their own little rape problem, actually. It's a great big rape problem. And Chris Christie found out when he spoke to Faith and Freedom just where the morals and the ethical center of the Christians is.
I'm running. Because he's let us down. He has let us down because he's unwilling. He's unwilling to take responsibility for any of the mistakes that were made. any of the faults that he has and any of the things that he's done. And that is not leadership, everybody. That is a failure of leadership. And you can boo all you want.
And they did. So then CNN decided to have a little sit-down with Chris Christie. Dana Bash.
From the Faith and Freedom Conference, where you made that speech. That must not have been easy to get booed, but you probably were not surprised.
Look, and half the room was clapping also. And so it was a real mixed bag. But look, I knew that's what was going to happen when I accepted the invitation. But I'm not changing my message and pandering to anybody. I'm going to tell the truth. The truth matters, Dana. And I'm telling the truth about Donald Trump.
I mean, okay. But I said we had some Supreme Court news. And we do. When last we checked in with our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties, we were finding out that Amy COVID Barrett had her own dodgy little real estate scheme going on. And apparently, having a Dodd being a Supreme Court justice or a spouse of one, and having a dodgy real estate transaction is, well, it's just de rigueur. I'm so old that I can remember back when Sammy Bad Breath was confirmed to the court. And as he faced some decidedly tepid questioning from Democrats back there in the early aughts, his wife, wearing a suit like that looked like the upholstery from a 1956 Edsel, sat behind him,
sniffling and weeping into her hanky because they were saying something. They were saying true things about her god awful husband.
Well, here we are, Mrs. Alito. Mrs. Justice Alito it turns out leased land in Oklahoma Stan to an oil and gas company. The nature of that lease was such that they promised her that she would get 3/16 of the profit from whatever they extracted from the land. Citizen Energy 3 is the name of the company. They don't have anything presently before the court directly. So technically it's not a conflict of interest. Direct being the operative term. Daniel Bogislaw at The Intercept reported on it all and noted a political outlook that has alarmed environmentalists since Alito's confirmation hearing in 2006 and cast recent decisions that embolden the oil and gas industry in a damning light. Over at the Revolving Door Project, Jeff Hauser, the founder and director there, speaking to The Intercept, said, "There need not be a specific case involving the drilling rights associated with a specific plot of land for Alito to understand what outcomes in environmental cases would buttress his family's net wealth. Alito doesn't have to come across like a drunken Paul Thomas Anderson character gleefully confessing to drinking our collective milkshakes. There will be blood. In order to be a real-life run-of-the-mill political villain." And then went on to point out that the author, the reporter did, Mr. Bogislaw, the decision that Sammy Bad Breath wrote for the majority that
basically trashed the Clean Water Act and his membership in a majority opinion in 2022 that gutted the EPA's ability to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. Daniel Bogislaw went on to say that Alito ruled on cases with the potential to impact gas and oil prices, both nationally and in Oklahoma, in Aniok Inc. versus Learjet Inc. Decided in 2015, Alito ruled with the majority to head off an attempt to block state antitrust laws from being applied to natural gas companies under the Natural Gas Act. I call it Aniok. It's one O-K. The largest supplier of natural gas in Oklahoma runs an active natural gas pipeline through the, how about that, the Alito plot. And we're not talking about a couple of parcels of dirt in Little Justice Rest Lawn. Of course, last week we were talking about his little trip to the Alaska fishing hole. And now we are in the we are in the final stretch for this term of the Supreme Court. So this is going to be this is grab your hat week, because probably some ugliness coming. Now, going back to Marge and her being spied on by her TV, Baltimore Bob says, hey, we're talking about Marge here. Even if she's 10% correct, that's way, she's batting way above her average. Now batting for the Washington Maggots, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Bats right, throws right, thinks wrong. Sorry. So down in Florida, Judge Aileen Cannon has granted a request in the espionage case against Nitwit Nero. Special Counsel Jack Smith requested a pretrial hearing, and she scheduled it for July 14th, celebrated in France as Bastille Day. Nitwit Nero nor Walt Nauta, neither of them will have to show. But earlier today, Aileen Cannon said that Jack Smith could not file his witness list under seal because news organizations have said, hey, we want to know who the witnesses are going to be. So they'll have a pretrial hearing on July the 14th. And, well, suffice to say, I don't have a great deal of confidence in Aileen Cannon. Meanwhile, down in Georgia, according to WRGA, Angela Antonella Rubino, she is the vice chair of the Etowah chapter of the Georgia Republican Assembly, got arrested this weekend because, well, she and three other maggots didn't get a permit before they demonstrated, before they demonstrated and protested the Pride event in Rome, Georgia. Other homophobes and transphobes were allowed to demonstrate against Pride, according to the Assistant Police Chief of Rome, Georgia, Debbie Burnett. But that was because they had gotten the proper permit for being
homophobic maggots, transphobic maggots. Police Chief Assistant Police Chief Debbie Burnett said, "We told them, we don't care if you protest, just get a permit and do it the right way." It will come as no surprise to anyone, you, me, entire Horn Family Community Congregation. It'll come as a surprise to no one at all that Angela Antonella Rubino wore an aluminum foil hat to a county commission meeting. Where she has become a bit of a feature for making frequent appearances at city and county government meetings, often questioning election integrity and the board's adherence to the U.S. Constitution that exists solely in her own mind. Right there, right after it says, "In the name of Jesus." 39-year-old Bradley Stephen Barnes, 37-year-old Melissa Renee Smith, and 37-year-old William David Smith were all arrested, along with Angela Antonella Rubino, for violating the assembly permit ordinance. And I was a little confused by the use of the phrase Georgia Republican Assembly. Turns out that's not an actual government organization. That's a bunch of barking, grunting, bleeding, hooting, howling, shrieking, screaming maggots who describe themselves as the conscience of the Republican Party. And they spend a lot of their time barking and grunting at Brian Kemp, who is no prize in his own right. And it gives me no joy to do so, but, well, shit, this is America. So we have to go over today in freedom. You know, the bloody Second Amendment kind. The NRA roulette wheel of death stopped on Kansas City, Missouri over the weekend, where there were a pair of shootings in the wee early morning hours of Sunday. 57th Street and Prospect Avenue is the location at about 4:30 a.m. Central Daylight Time. Cops showed up and found three people dead in a parking lot and in the street near the intersection. KCPD said those three victims, two adult males and one adult female, were declared deceased here at the scene. Five other victims were taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The police said preliminary information indicates there was a large gathering of people in a parking lot at the intersection when the victims were shot. Detectives are confident that there are many witnesses to this incident that would have valuable information. Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Quentin Lucas said there were at least some critical injuries. $25,000 reward is out for information leading to the arrest and conviction of whoever initiated the outbreak of Second Amendment freedom. I thought I took my Tums. Steve says I'm burping. Oh, I am. I am. Okay, burping over. Okay, we got to it in less than a minute. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, Steve. Also, in other outbreaks of Second Amendment freedom, I'm going to have to start keeping a box of tissues in here for some of these. Story count comes out of course, Poole, Texas, P-O-O-L-E, P-O-O-L-E. Story goes back to September 30th, 2022. 12-year-old girl was taking photographs with her daddy. And they were taking those typical maggot photos of adults and children holding weapons of war. Thirty-eight-year-old Daniel Brown was handling an assault rifle in the picture. He had a federal firearms license that allowed him to sell and store firearms. So they took the pictures of him and her holding the Second Amendment remedies, the physical manifestations of the only reason we have freedom in this country. And then the little 12-year-old girl turned around and blew her daddy away. And then she killed herself. The cops went on and charged another 12-year-old from Lufkin, Texas, another little girl. The cops said that the two girls had a suicide pact, a murder-suicide pact, and that the 12-year-old girl was taken into custody and charged with conspiracy to murder. The case has since been resolved last March, but due to privacy laws for underage kids, no one knows exactly what the outcome was. This might be a good time to point out that abolish the Second Amendment should... Well, you know, somebody needs to say it. The Second Amendment is an anachronism every bit as much as the Three-Fifths Clause and the Electoral College. Meanwhile, in Florida, Jesus, that truly odious piece of legislation sponsored by the National Rifle Association, the Florida Stand Your Ground Law. Well, Bradley Hossover, a 57-year-old man from Dunedin, Florida, squeezed off 30 rounds from an AR-15 at a pool cleaner. You know, the net and you'd skim up the leaves and shit and take out the alligators and stuff. Yeah, Carl Polek, 33 years old, pool cleaner, got hit by shrapnel and glass. For being, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, a pool cleaner. He worked with Bay Area Pool Techs, and he'd showed up to service a pool at 41 Concord Drive. And Jana Hossover, presumably the spouse of Bradley Hossover, put it in Hossover and Hossover it for a little while. I'll see. She heard noises out in the pool lanai and saw a male on the pool deck she didn't recognize. And, well, you know what you do in Florida when you see a pool cleaner that you've never seen before. You call hubby and ask him to squeeze off 30 rounds at the pool cleaner. Bradley Hossover hollered, "Get away! Go on now! Get!" a lot.
And the pool cleaner's like, what? I'm supposed to be cleaning the pool. So that's when Bradley Hossifer went and got his AR-15, Freedom Protector. From the bedroom. Wonder why it was... Well, never mind. And started shooting at the pool cleaner. Because it was nighttime. The Pinellas County Sheriff's Office and Sheriff Bob Gualtieri said, in hindsight, he should have probably let them know he was coming at 9 o'clock at night, yet he made no effort to contact them at all. Presumably, they knew that the pool cleaner was coming because, well, they called for the pool cleaner to come. And there's a fella's got a lot of pools to clean in a place like Florida. And so it's not like the guy was charged and tried and put up the stand your ground defense. No, hell no. A Florida jury will never get to hear this case because Sheriff Bob Gualtieri said that Bradley Hossifer, if I did not know this was a carrot, I'd swear that it was Hossifer. Oh no, that's Hossenpfeffer. No, the high sheriff said, of course Bradley Hossifer had a right to squeeze off 30 rounds. You don't reckon the first round scared him away? He's a pool cleaner, not a member of the Wagner Group, for the love of God. Then again, I don't know that much about Florida. Maybe it's routine for the pool cleaner to dodge AR-15 rounds while trying to skim bugs out of a pool so Mrs. Hossifer won't have to have a conniption when she sees a bug in her pool. God! I mean, okay, one round you're standing your ground. Rounds 2 through 30, I think, are a different matter, don't you? Great big jumping Jehoshaphat with an AR-15. Forget it, Jake. It's Florida. Thank God for the Second Amendment, because otherwise the jackbooted government would put their jackboots on our freedom-loving necks right there next to the tattoo that says, only God can judge me. Whew! So that's it for the second hour of this Morin Monday. I told you there were many Morins. And we got $1,400 to catch up with where we ought to be. Thanks for the challenges, and thanks for those who responded. So helpful. If we could keep that going into the third hour, it would be fantastic. Just fantastic, because we've knocked down... $600 of the deficit. So thank you. And if you'd like to help out, there's never been a better time. Let's run over to the stress line, see who's on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin. I have some news from Christine's blind.
Yes.
Today.
I hope it is good.
Well, she was coming back from the doctor's, and she realized that she had locked herself out of the trailer.
Oh, no.
She thought she had tossed a package from Amazon into the door, and she thought it might be on the floor. Turns out when my niece got there with the spare key and let her in, it was hanging up on the peg where it normally hangs.
Oh, no.
It wasn't around her neck. Fortunately, the weather was kind of nice today. I reminded her, I said, well, dear, at least it wasn't winter when this happened.
True.
So
always looking for the bright side, Dave.
Right. And she informed me that now the key is firmly around her neck and it's not going anywhere for a while. That's the humorous bit of news from my area of the world. And I'm wondering, Robin, this fight with marginal trader queen, what's the difference if the Freedom Caucus does throw her out? It's not like it's going to shut her up.
No, honestly, not much, but it's kind of laying down a marker. It's the purity wars. The purity wars have begun within the Republican Party. And goody.
Well, you know, this fight started a few months back in the ladies' room off the House floor, as I recall.
Yeah, true.
And so now it's all spilled out in public view. Because as I recall, one of their Democratic colleagues refused to speak about it when she witnessed it. But, you know, that's nothing. Christine and I were talking about Donald Trump's sugar daddy having problems in the Russia this weekend. I reminded her that both Boris Yeltsin and Mikhail Gorbachev had similar issues. And within a few months, their governments fell. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Putin is far smarter than that. And if he's not, then the old man is so diseased, they need to give him the old Soviet retirement plan. No. Go back to the dacha, relax, enjoy yourself. We'll let you know when we need you. And of course,
enjoy time in dacha. Yes, go to sauna, beat on your back with a spruce twig in old Russian tradition.
And of course, you realize that the announcement is made sadly, our beloved leader Vladimir Putin was found dead today in his sauna.
In an unfortunate sauna accident.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's not who you root for in this fight, because both Vladimir Putin and Prigozhin are evil bastards who need to be taken off the face of the earth. But I digress.
Sometimes digressing is good.
He, Prigozhin evidently is getting a lot of support because Russians who actually see he and his mercenaries as better taken care of than their sons in the federal army. And that's gotta sting a little for Vlad. I mean, he comes out 1 hour, oh, I'm going to crush this guy, you know, and then, well, if he goes to Belarus, we'll leave him alone. That doesn't sound like strength. That sounds like a guy who's shitting his pants.
For good reason. You know, live by the umbrella, die by the umbrella.
Well, Christine asked me, did he get the nuclear tea? And I said, probably.
But all kidding aside, when this happened in 1917, there were no nuclear weapons.
True.
And as one British Ministry of Defense official pointed out, it's not like Evgeny Prigozhin is a democracy-loving patriot. He's a fascist.
You know, the ghost of Adolf Hitler is probably looking over and going, damn, these guys are making me look professional. See, what a lot of people don't understand about dictatorial regimes is they pit their constituents off against each other so that no one constituency can grab power from those who are holding on to it. Get a clue, Democrats. This is what the Republican playbook is.
It's not like it's a secret.
Yeah. And you should get a cowbell for the Krispy Kreme comment.
No. That's old.
That's old?
Oh, very old.
It's the first time I ever heard it.
Oh, no. That's been used years.
Okay. Well, I'll defer to that, but I thought that was a good comment.
Well, thank you. It was new to you.
You know, if the presidential run doesn't work for Chris Christie, he could get a franchise from Blimpie's sandwiches. All he have to do is fly himself outside the store. Get all kinds of attention.
Oh, my God. Shame on you. No fat shaming here. No fat shaming.
I didn't say anything about fat. He appears like a blimp on legs. And I've been next to the Goodyear blimp once. That was an amazing piece of engineering. As a matter of fact, I was about 9 years old, and I gave my brother, sister, and I little wooden Goodyear blimps. And today is my sister and brother-in-law's 24th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And I reminded her that my grandmother once told me that, this is right after my grandfather had died. She said, David, I loved your grandpa, but there were days I wish they'd declare open season on husband. And then she added, and I'm sure there were days he'd wish they'd declared open season on wives. And they were married for 46 years. So that was pretty interesting. It's been a very interesting day today. I'm just waiting for Bugs Bunny to show up with the heart monster and so the heart monster can get a manicure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. If you catch the rabbit, I will give you a delicious. If you catch the rabbit, I will give you a delicious spider goulash. Seymour. Wasn't his name Seymour?
I don't remember. All I remember is Bugs was doing the monster's nails and going, monsters are the most interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was. This is never going to hold. You're going to determine an end. Bang!
And then he put his fur up in curlers and all. I mean, well, you know, it was probably one of the early makeover shows. If you can have Bugs doing a makeover for somebody. Oh. But. I love the fact that some idiots down in Georgia got arrested for protesting without a permit for the Rome Pride event. Now, if you're gonna fuck up, you might as well fuck up where there's a lot of attention. And you know they'll be fundraising on this.
Well, you have to remember, I mentioned Rome, Georgia. That is Marge's district.
Oh, it is? Well, that would explain her dictatorial tendencies then, Robin.
You mean the Rome part?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's face it. She has her head shoved up Donnie's backside, and Donnie juts his chin out just like Benito Mussolini.
Oh, yeah, we've remarked on that on a number of occasions.
He also crosses his arms like Mussolini. So when you call him Mango Mussolini, that ain't off the mark. That's right on target.
No, it's and it's exactly as you described, the crossed arms, the jutting chin. All you got to do is Photoshop that thing on his head off of him, and you've got Benito Mussolini.
And let us not forget the notorious sexual assaults, Robin.
Mussolini's or his?
Because Mussolini was known for it.
Yes.
There's that. Like I said, about a month or two ago, I finished Right. And I'm seeing a lot of parallels. The blaming your political opponents for your fuck up. The playing one constituent group off against another. The going after people who are considered different just as something to target. Because you might not have a job, you might not have a wife or a wife, but at least you're not fill in the blank. And do you know who gave, that the Americans gave the Nazis their salute?
Who? Was it Mussolini?
No. We talked about the that advertising piece known as the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
Originally, didn't put your hand over your heart when you said it. You extended your arm and hand out almost parallel to the ground as you recited it. And Hitler liked it and adopted it for the Nazis. So we gave him the Nazi salute, which explains why the neo-Confederate fuckheads like stepping behind their Lord and Fuhrer, Donald Trump.
I'll be damned.
But I have to give it up for the Lincoln Project. They might be a bunch of right-wing douchebags in their everyday life, but if they can make Donnie go, ow, 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 I'm all for it. I mean, these guys know how to write an ad, for God's sake.
Oh, true.
My favorite one is when they were talking about the all the witnesses for the grand jury. Well, who's talking about you, Donnie? Yeah. And you know people on his staff who are underpaid and overworked are passing those around where, oh, well, we accidentally forgot not to turn it off. You know he's heard them all.
Oh, without a doubt.
I wonder how the spirochetes are doing at night when he, who doesn't drink, downs, you know, several bottles in the cellar to get to sleep.
Well, you know, and we're paraphrasing here, but in T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, and I'm willing to bet this is the only radio program that's referenced the Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock today. I have heard the spirochetes singing each to each.
Well, I thought it would be more like Lewis Carroll's Jabberwocky. Snickersnack. But Carroll was known as a drug-addled man. And, you know, the whole thing of Donnie proclaiming that he's never done drugs. All right, I'm going to say it. Bullshit.
Well,
I've never done illegal drugs. There's nothing illegal about Adderall.
Now, I took a class in college for drug use in America. And that, to be addicted to a drug doesn't necessarily mean an illegal drug. You can have a drug problem and have prescribed drugs to you. So this thing, I don't have a drug problem. No, what he's got is he's surrounded by yes men. And you know what's going to happen the minute he dies. The minute he dies, a wank of my daddy is gonna come out with a book going, yeah, Dad did everything. Every dirty, sleazy bullshit thing you ever thought he did. And she's gonna make a bundle on it. Because let us never have a dead body that doesn't pay off. That's the Trump motto.
I've never heard it expressed quite like that, but you're not wrong.
Well, I mean, look at Ivana. I mean, her ashes are resting in a coffin. Kind of redundant, but okay. Because they needed the coffin buried to declare Bug Monster as the cemetery. So they didn't have to pay taxes on it. Which makes me wonder why Jack Smith's not asking a federal judge for an exhumation order. What, you know, they're still missing documents. Well, they haven't searched the monster. There's one place that there could definitely be documents, but, well, courts are a little loath to disturb. But you can show cause. And I might, I wouldn't be surprised if there were in there. Yeah, or at least he's gone. There's something, you know, something he didn't want to give up. God. You better be glad I'm not on the jury.
Well, you know, look, we're a third of the way through the third hour of the program, Dave, and you know what? We've managed to almost not talk about the libertarian death thermos at all. And after last week, I'm calling that a win.
Yeah. Yeah. And you notice, Robin, and I probably have to insert it here, the warning, Dave and the Blind is on the air, you know, just as a precaution, step away from your midday snack.
Rick, there. Pay attention.
You have been warned, okay, because normally I would have to do that at the beginning of the call. But things have been going so smoothly, and I know how the goddess of irony is with me. It'll all of a sudden take a turn that I get all kinds of, you know, Shorty in L.A. gets all over me or something about, Dave, don't do that, you know, after I've already done something. Yeah. I do appreciate it. And I have been sleeping a lot in the last couple of weeks. That's why you haven't heard from me. I actually slept through the program a few times because nighttime begins at 9 a.m. like it does for everybody. You make a joke about Mrs. Trump not wanting to get out of her coffin during the day, but I really don't. I sleep during the day, and I get up about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's when my breakfast hits and all of that, because it's 7 o'clock in the morning somewhere. anyway, Robin, it has been a pleasure talking to you.
And it always
I'll
is.
Get off here so somebody else can get on. And
hey, stand by a second. I got a kitty cat trying to get in the door.
Is that Kyle trying to talk to me?
No, it was actually Socrates. He comes in at night, but it's a little early yet.
Well, I appreciate him trying to get on the call. Because
he has a lot to say. He has a lot to say.
Well, he's not as talkative as, maybe Kyle is. But, yeah. I know from having hung around plenty of Christine's cats over the years that when they want to talk, they'll get in your face about it. So, I'll talk to you later, Robin.
All right, Dave, you take care. Give our best to Christine, please.
I will.
All right, bye. So I wanted to take a minute. I mentioned we hadn't talked about the libertarian death thermos. But time does deserve to be taken for the real tragedy. Some kind of criminal accountability is finally taking place with regard to the migrant ship disaster off the Greek coast. 500 people remain missing from that. 500, not five. 500. And the suspects have been taken into custody. And they are Egyptians. Only 104 men and young people. Broadly speaking, they were Egyptians, Pakistanis, Syrians, and Palestinians, survived that horror. It was, of course, a capitalist affair. Nobody pulled an old fishing vessel up and said, hey, everybody wants to get to Europe, get in, we're going. People were paying as much as $7,000 apiece to get on that rust bucket. The Associated Press saw sworn testimony transcripts over the weekend. Over the course of 5 days, the people on the boat were mostly denied food and water. If they had the money, they could bribe the crew to get out of the hold. But if they tried to reach deck level, they were beaten. And it all happened due to a botched attempt to tow the boat, the ship, because the seas themselves were calm. In his sworn testimony, Abdul Rahman Al-Haz said, the Greek ship cast a rope and it was tied to our bows. Then we moved forward, but not for more than 2 minutes. We shouted, stop, stop, because our boat was listing. It was in bad shape and overloaded and shouldn't have been towed. Abdul Rahman Al-Haz is a Palestinian man from Syria. And he paid probably everything he had to his name, $4,000. To get aboard the ship at Tobruk in eastern Libya. He said most of the Pakistanis were in the hold and were lost with the boat. One of the crew had told me there were more than 400 Pakistanis on the boat and only 11 were saved. 23-year-old Rana Husnain Nasir was one of the men in the hold. Actually, he was on deck. He paid 7,000 euros for the trip. But his wife and his two children were in the hold, and they died. The crew didn't give us food or water, and they hit us with a belt to keep us from standing up. Talking about the towing, he said it was attached by a big ship, but I didn't see it as I was bent low and praying. You know, to the sky. Azmat Khan Muhammad Salahu, you know, say their names. These are survivors. He was 36, is 36. He identified three of the suspects and said one of them hit him when he tried to leave the hold and another one hit people with a belt. There were, of course, no women and children in his section below decks because that would offend, you know, Sky Daddy. I was saved because I found an opening and got out. I called to the others to follow me, but nobody managed to escape. The Greek government, of course, did nothing or less than nothing to save the migrants before the ship sank. It was, after all, in international waters. Greek government officials are saying, well, they refused help. Said they were just going on to Italy. And you can't just get hundreds of people who aren't willing off an overcrowded ship. Yep, because I'm sure they wanted to sit around and be beaten. And last Tuesday, while we were completely obsessed with the libertarian death thermos, well, it was World Refugee Day. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said, it is horrible what happened, and the more urgent is that we act. Think about it. Syria, Pakistan, to get all the way to Tobruk. And of course, I saw the word Tobruk and I immediately recognized the name of a brutal battle in the Second World War. But to go all the way from Pakistan to Tobruk in Libya? That in itself was a hell journey. 5 more human trafficking suspects were arrested in Pakistan this week. And people in the know in Islamabad last week said that, well, some of them confessed to sending some of the Pakistanis. They brought their own food with them, some of them. And according to Ali Sheikhi from a town in northeast Syria, said no life jackets were allowed by the crew, and any food that they brought with them, the crew threw into the sea. They'd been at sea for 5 days. Water ran out after a day and a half. And that greatest horror of being adrift at sea, well, some of those making that horrid journey took to drinking seawater. And in that lies madness. And thank you to Baltimore Bob. Thank you so much. Baltimore Bob has put a $100 challenge on the table. Hopefully it can be met before programs end. In memory of the refugees drowning in the Mediterranean Sea, Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Thank you for keeping them in your heart and in your mind. And of course, these were people from Pakistan, Syria, Egypt. And so therefore, you know, in places like the UK, Rishi Sunak could not give less of a fuck. And white-wing assholes all over Europe are, well, you know, that's 750 less of those people that'll be coming here. But it's the willful ignorance of why there's a refugee crisis that drives me up a tree. There's not a blessed thing in all the chaos in Central and Western Asia that isn't the direct and proximate result of actions taken by white Western Europe and the United States of America. Whether it is our response to the slow collapse of the sick man of Europe, the Sublime Porte, or later on, the partition of the Middle East in the aftermath of the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, after the Second World War. Boundaries drawn arbitrarily, deals made and broken. Wannabe dictators propped up. Every problem that we have in that region, whether it be Iran or Saudi Arabia or any other country, is entirely a hell of our own making. Meanwhile, in Germany, the nearest thing that Germany has to a full-on right-wing fascist party, the Alternative für Deutschland party, well, they won their first election over the weekend. And they said specifically that their goal was punishing the political establishment in Germany. The anti-government sentiment is particularly strong in what was once East Germany. The interview I'm looking at comes from Sonneberg, where Ingo Schreyers, age 58, said that he hopes the new AfD district administrator, a fascist wannabe at least, named Robert Sesselmann, would, quote, give voice to the worries and fears and outrage of a lot of citizens. And that Berlin had enacted destructive economic policies, and that they were afraid they couldn't heat their homes in the coming winter. Well, don't worry, Ingo. We're building a pipeline across Appalachia to send you frack gas from our own poisoned lands to make sure you can. Being described as a watershed moment, and you probably won't hear about much about this on the multimillionaire for-profit media. you kind of get a sense for what the mindset is. Olga Müller, 49, says he no longer sees any Germans when he drives through Sonneberg at night. He said he hopes that Alternative für Deutschland will stop the flow of the foreigners. Wonder who he means. The Engländer? The Französisch? The Italian? No. He means people like the people who drowned at sea off the Greek coast. There was a runoff in Germany, and Robert Sesselmann, AfD, got 52.8% of the vote to as compared to his conservative rival, Jürgen Kirper. All the mainstream parties got behind Jürgen Kirper, hoping to block the rise of a fascist tide. It's just a little tiny constituency. There's only 57,000 in that particular district council. But in Germany, it was worrisome. The public broadcaster ARD said it was a watershed moment. The newspaper Bild said it was a vote in anger. And the Tageszeitung was shocked at the outcome. Josef Schuster, who heads the Central Council of Jews in Germany, said it was a dam break and democratic political forces in this country must not simply accept it. And the AfD's poll numbers are surging across Germany. AfD got more than 20.5% of the vote, full percentage point higher than the 19.5% that the Social Democrats got. The Greens got 13.5%, and the FDP, the pro-business party, got 6.5%. The Christian Democrats, center-right, did best at 26.5%. And the AfD is surging in Thuringia, Brandenburg, Saxony, and they all have regional elections next year. And the fascists have high hopes. Remember, fascism came to Italy before it got to Germany 100 years ago. A lot of the ruins that we see of ancient Rome were the products of fascist propaganda efforts by, well, I got to thinking about all of this because of what Dave said about Mussolini. It was Mussolini who was trying to restore the grandeur of the Roman Empire. And that's how road building, excavation of the forum. Because by something like 600 CE, Rome was unrecognizable. But, you know, there were things sticking out of the ground here and there, so. Well, like the Theater of Pompey, where where Pompey built a senate house, a curia. That was only exposed as a result actually, it was destroyed by old cardinals and bishops and the like going and taking the really nicely cut stone and, what is it? The Palazzo at Tivoli, built by a cardinal, was built from the stones of Hadrian's villa not far away. Sixty-one-year-old Birgit Hilmer in Sonneberg in Germany said she was deeply ashamed at what her town had done, boosting the fascists. I find it really terrible and embarrassing. We're doing very well in this district. People here grew up in a dictatorship and were marked by the dictatorship. Democracy means freedom and freedom means responsibility, but people have shirked their responsibility here. And make no mistake that the AFD is, they're probably best compared to the Republicans here. They're anti-immigration, they're anti-Islam, they're certainly anti-refugee. Over at Der Spiegel, they called the AfD win in Sonneberg the result of a collective failure of the political class, because the Chancellor Scholz's coalition is constantly bickering amongst themselves while the right wing pours oil on the fire with populist rhetoric. The co-chairman of the AfD, one Tino Truppala, said, "This is just the beginning." And the horror, is that he may be right. Thank you, Gino, out in Utah. Thank you so much for meeting Baltimore Bob's challenge, thank you. And so we are down to $1,200 to get caught up. Thank you, Gino. Thank you so very much. Meanwhile, back in America, as we wrap things up for the evening, Secret Service agents, it turns out, have been called before the grand jury to answer questions about the terrorist attack, the domestic terrorist attack of January 6, 2021. This immediately triggered speculation among folks who recall the history of the events so far. That the reason for that might have been to verify some of the testimony given by Cassidy Hutchinson. She was the one who told the world about Nitwit Nero throwing the ketchup, about Nitwit Nero trying to grab the steering wheel, his desperation to go and stand with the terrorists in his attempt to overthrow the government of the United States of America. Washington Post reporter Carol Lennick, speaking to MSNBC and Nicole Wallace, laid out what her understanding was.
For the really good reporting, I would add a few things. We don't know what Jack Smith and his team are asking those agents, but any former or current agent who's being questioned about Donald Trump's activities and White House activities in the days leading up to January 6th is bound to get an earful about things that we've all reported on for more than a year. And that includes, as you may well remember, Nicole, that Donald Trump always planned to march on the Capitol. For 2 weeks, he was communicating with his agents about his desire to do this. His White House Deputy Chief of Staff and former detail leader, Tony Ornato, was hoping that Donald Trump would sort of forget this idea that he would march on the Capitol with protesters coming to Washington, the ones he summoned on January 6th. And at the very last couple of days, Donald Trump made clear, oh, no, 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 I haven't forgotten. I really want to march on the Capitol. You'll also remember the march on the Capitol is illegal. There was a permit for a rally, but not for a march. And internally, Trump supporters who supported this rally were communicating their nervousness about the fact that it would be illegal to announce a march, and yet Trump supporters were doing just that, promoting this almost as a cage match that would head up to the U.S. Capitol on the day that Congress was slated to certify the victory, the presidential election of President-elect Joe Biden. What else is it that Jack Smith is going to learn from agents that Julie's described well in this story? What else are they going to learn? They could learn about Donald Trump's state of mind heading into January 6th. Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony, which you aired just now, about Donald Trump being completely comfortable with his supporters having weapons, pistols, rifles, knives, flak jackets, bulletproof vests, bear spray, all of these things were being communicated to him in a risk assessment on the day of, and yet he said, I don't care. Take the magnetometers down. They can come and march with me to the Capitol. That idea of sort of pointing the armament and pointing the weapon at the Capitol really tells you a lot about Donald Trump's state of mind, and agents who are on the right shoulder of the president can give you an eye into that that no one else can.
You know, Carol, a lot of what we know is in this frame of great reporting, great journalism, and you did a ton of it, as well as a congressional investigation. And we don't know ever, when we have these conversations, how much Jack Smith has been able to pierce beyond the body of information we have from news reporting and from the committee. But it was a sense until the very end. I mean, I remember asking Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren until like the last 12 hours that the committee existed about Secret Service response to their efforts to get all their messages. And it's clear that in the end they got some emails where they couldn't get text messages, but they were never able to fully pierce the inner conversations that agents were having amongst themselves. It feels significant that this reporting suggests a half a dozen agents have been before the grand jury. That seems like a significant difference between how far Congress was able to get and how far Jack Smith may now be.
Well, of course. I mean, once you get somebody in a subpoena grand jury testimony, they're under incredible penalty and pain to remember it accurately and to tell you the full story. And I have to say, you know, we all should keep in mind the dueling heart of a Secret Service agent. They have historically believed that they keep the confidences of their president so that they can keep that president close and safe. That if they start blabbing about what they see inside
Hold on a minute, sister. They keep the confidence of their president. Was that what the Secret Service was doing when they were passing around racist jokes about the incoming president of the United States in 2008 and 2009? Was that what that was? Keeping the I understand what Carol Lenig is saying. But it ain't always necessarily so, because the bottom line is these organizations are authoritarian structures in nature. And they are going to gravitate toward authoritarian presidents. Otherwise, why else make, you know, those jokes about incoming President Barack Obama? Renegade was his call sign. And I remember recalling the lyrics of a song by Styx called Renegade. And a particular phrase in it. And that was just the old DJ in me, but I haven't forgotten. A couple other things on the way out the door. A little bit of something resembling justice today. Anderson Lee Aldrich, having pled guilty to 5 counts of first-degree murder and 46 counts of attempted murder after the Club Q shooting, was sentenced today. 23 years old, he will spend life in a Colorado state prison without the possibility of parole. He also pleaded no contest, and that's important, to 2 counts of bias-motivated crimes. Now, his no contest plea will result in him being adjudged guilty of them. After his murder spree at Club Q, he was charged with 323 criminal counts, including the murders. And a trans woman helped stop him. The survivors of his victims spoke to the court about what he had done to their lives. Cassandra Fierro said of Raymond Green Vance, the man she hoped to marry, "I will never get the chance to marry the love of my life. I will never get to start a family with Raymond. I will never get to see, hear, or feel Raymond ever again." Club Q was a safe space. And Anderson Lee Aldrich shattered that. Anderson Lee Aldrich continued to claim that he identifies as non-binary. There is not a shred of evidence to suggest that in the past. The sentencing judge gave him 5 consecutive, not concurrent, 5 consecutive life sentences. And more than 2,200 years of additional prison time for attempted murder counts. Judge Michael McHenry said, "Your actions reflect the deepest malice of the human heart, and malice is almost always born of ignorance and fear." But it's the final paragraph of this story from Reuters that got to me. Aldrich was known to law enforcement, having been arrested in June 2021. Aldrich's mother had reported that Aldrich had threatened to detonate a bomb and harm her with multiple weapons. According to a press release from the El Paso County Sheriff's Office, Aldrich's mother declined to testify for the prosecution, and the case was dismissed. There should have been another paragraph. The sheriff of El Paso County, Colorado, had declared that despite the presence of red flag laws in Colorado designed to stop exactly these sorts of massacres, that he, the high sheriff of El Paso County, Colorado, cared more about guns and the Second Amendment rights of the citizenry than he did about stopping massacres, and absolutely refused to enforce the red flag laws in El Paso County, Colorado. So if there were any justice in this world, that sheriff would see blood running down his face every time he glanced at a mirror. And it's not over yet. If the United States Department of Justice chooses to bring charges, Anderson Lee Aldrich may yet face the horizontal crucifixion. And I'm trying not to hope that he does. A note coming in from our pal Jessica Minnesota. I went to my second Pride event in Minneapolis yesterday, my first Twin Cities celebration since 2019 and since I came out in 2020. I celebrated my first Pride event as Jessica in May of 2022 at Soldiers Field Park in the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere. I love that phrase. In 2019, Rochester Pride was in September and Twin Cities Pride was June, so a closeted me celebrated in a t-shirt bearing the phrase, "This isn't even my final form," written on it. It was a gift from Susan, who accompanied me and supported me as I started my journey. It was a wonderful day spent together, but this year I went with friends as Susan's rheumatoid arthritis wouldn't let her fully enjoy the day. I missed her this year. I missed celebrating with her. As I walked around Loring Park, I was surrounded by love, acceptance, visibility, queer happiness, but it was bittersweet as I passed by spots where we had shared significant moments together. But I was there, Robin. I was at the parade in downtown Minneapolis. I tossed my hat in the air next to the Mary Richards, Mary Tyler Moore statue. Oh, swoon. I was visibly trans in the handmade trans pride flag dress a friend made for me to wear at Rochester Pride last year. In a year where the fascists want us to crawl back into the closet, I was visibly and defiantly trans. And if I'm even as I'm still a little bummed Pride is over, I still feel the love from being among my extended queer family. So let me give you a little of that love, Robin. $2 for 2 years of Twin Cities Pride, $3 for 3 years of Rochester Pride, and double it for a total of 10. And if someone has another 10 to match it, Robin and I would appreciate it. Oh, Jessica, that's so sweet. Thank you. So far, I've been to Pride in two places, two very small places. Three times in Beckley, and once at the very first Greenbrier County West Virginia Pride. And knock wood, it appears we will get through this Pride month with relatively little horror. And may it become less and less so as the years progress. Okay, Ken, okay. More ontology, yes. Not even worth a lazy llama cowbell? No, Ken, you get full cowbell for more ontology. Thank you. So more in Monday is at a close. Back with Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Remember, likely no program on Wednesday. Thank you to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you for the challenges this evening, one and all. Thanks to Gino answering Baltimore Bob saying, "Let's get that challenge met," and then meeting that challenge. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all volunteer staff, excuse me. Let me see here. I don't know if we ever had a mod in the room this evening or not, but thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Roger. Roger was traveling. Roger went to a lovely wedding in New York. And thank you to Steve, who has been just busting his butt of late. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, tell your friends and neighbors. We'll build this little community. And as we approach the 20, well, we're actually past the 20-year mark. Well, we'll try to keep it going for, dare we say it, 20 more. Knock wood, and that's solid. That ain't no veneer. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Jude says, subject line, Jessica, a wide open experience that we just shared with her, even from a distance. Or is it a distance? On my walk, the further the distance, the closer the heart connection. Thank you. When you get a note like that, Jessica, from Jude, you know you have touched her soul. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you're eligible. This thing hasn't gone away. It's gone from pandemic to endemic. We're going to be dealing with it for always. So act accordingly. Wear your mask when you're around, especially when you're around the maggots. Because God Almighty only knows what kind of diseases they carry. And they don't much care. That's the thing. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. Still a good idea. And if an adipose 6'2" tall wad of jiggling insecurities, hatreds, petty jealousies comes waddling towards you, babbling about how
they didn't even report on my Man of the Decade award.
Well, avoid the head maggot like the plague. Because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.